There's a snap. There's a kick. It is up. It is no good. No one missed.
I think we got a heck of a shot of winning. We beat anybody in the world, and I think we're going to win next Sunday.
Eli Manning stays on his feet, airs it out down the field. It is caught by Tyree.
For all you non-believers, disrespect us, talk crap about the defense like we ain't the third best defense in the league.
See you in Pittsburgh.
Can't wait.
Fitzpatrick. End zone. Eric Decker holds it in. The Jets win in overtime.
And the New York Giants, given last rites by many in December, are the Super Bowl champs in February.
This is NFL Friday, going long on all news, reaction, and game picks for the Giants, Jets, and across the NFL on WFUV Sports.
What's up, everyone, and welcome in to NFL Friday, WFUV's best and only NFL podcast. I'm Griffin Stevenson, joined by my co-hosts Joe Henry and Nathan Rogers. Behind the glass is Mary Hannah Gallagher. We are at the pinnacle of the NFL season. We're going to be talking about the conference championship games, looking ahead towards the Super Bowl on this chilly, chilly, chilly Thursday morning we're recording this on. But first, I'll start with you, Joe. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing, a little bit tired, to be honest. But NFL Friday always kind of wakes you up a little bit, as does the coffee from the kitchenette. And otherwise, it's been a crazy week. We're preparing, we're sending a few of us to the Super Bowl to do some on-site reporting. Myself and Brandon Shorey will be at the game as well. And then me, Brandon, Griffin, Tucker, Owen, and Chris will all be there in Santa Clara, in San Francisco, in San Jose, and Daly City. Really, in every city you can imagine in the state of California. Boots on the ground, as one might say. To give the best possible coverage, and we're really thrilled about that, and we're working hard in the preparatory phases.
Really quick before I ask Nathan how he's doing, do you know which one of you and Brendan is going to be in the...
Brendan's going to be the press box.
Oh, he couldn't give you the... I guess you were the second credential. That's fair. Joe was the second credential for our audio listeners, but for those who aren't familiar, for the Super Bowl, usually what they do is, since literally everyone from the media at all is going to be there, not enough room in the press box, so there's kind of like a control room, I would say.
With media workroom.
Media workroom, yeah. But we were lucky to get two game credentials this year, which I don't know if we've ever gotten.
Last time that's happened.
Yeah.
Huge.
But Joe Henry, Patriots fan, gets to go. But Nathan, how are you doing?
Yeah, Niners fan over here, so I'm pretty sad. But I'm freezing. It's too cold. Yeah. I don't understand how it gets that cold.
Yeah, you do have a t-shirt on.
We're inside, though. Got to rep Fordham Swim,
too. But you said it's freezing. That's like a present tense situation. I don't know if you're still a little chilly.
It's more of a mindset.
More of a mindset.
More than like a physical thing, okay, too. Like, I'm just freezing because also, like, what's up with the crosswalks, the plowing? Like,
oh, my gosh.
What's up with that?
Oh, my gosh.
So there's literally,
I have a bone to pick.
It's 5:51, okay? It's 2 degrees. I'm going to practice, and I'm bundled up like we're in the Arctic, and I have to, like, traverse over like I'm, like, Jon Snow in Game of Thrones. And, like, in front of, like... Like, I'm losing aura in front of everybody.
There's a comical pileup outside of Superbest.
It's insane.
It's like,
no,
10 foot high.
And that's how, like, because I walked down Lorillard. For audio listeners, you know, that's how we get to campus from, like, our apartments and stuff.
Yeah, I live right next to Nathan Rogers, actually.
Yeah.
Shout out.
And so there's just, like, no way to get across there. And I'm like, why? Why is it like that?
It's insane. Like, the majority of the crosswalks in the Bronx or in the Fordham area are
the Belmont neighborhood
just covered in snow, and you can't use them, and you have to find the nearest crosswalk, or do your best World War One impression
and a sled to, like,
army crawl over the trenches to get into the street. And then
I'm on a shot clock. It's it's 6, 5, 4, but
you're
there's like
the
family
pressure
of seven
you're
watching
like Chris
me.
Henry when it's taken down.
You know, there's like a Margot Robbie watching me, right?
And yeah,
like, what's up with that? I'm like, I don't know. And then I fall in like a pit of snow, and I'm like,
exactly.
I'm sorry.
Well, still the best aura loss I've seen so far in the cold weather. It was actually when we got the first bit of snow, like 2 weeks ago. Me and my roommates on a nice Saturday morning, nothing better than waking up, going to Burning Beaks. And as we're
in the morning?
No, well, like, well,
oh, what are you waking up?
This is a Saturday. This isn't the morning. It was like one. It was like 1:30. But going to Burning Beaks, and as we're approaching Burning Beaks, we just see the person in front of us just absolutely like yard sale it out of the ground. We didn't help him.
Wow.
Because I would dare to say,
not my assistant.
No, as a okay,
is that the FUV principal?
As a guy, though, hear me out.
Okay,
what's a worse? I think it's a worse or loss if instead of. You just eat it, and then you get up, you know, brush yourself off. It's way worse.
Like, if you get help.
The worst thing you hear after you fall down and, like, eat it and hope no one sees you. Yeah, or, like, you okay? Like, I remember I was on crutches because I broke my ankle first semester freshman year. Great luck. You know the steps outside of Low Shirt, like, walking up towards the church?
Sure. Yeah.
It was, like, 8 a.m. going to my 8:30 class, which already makes me, like I was sweaty because I was on crutches. Like, it makes you sweaty having to traverse campus. Sure. I go to step up those stairs. And just completely
eat it.
Yeah.
I just wow. Yeah. Play action pass pretty here good. On NFL Friday. That was a
That's
great
play action pass.
That was a great. That was
almost Malcolm Butler there.
Yeah, it was so. It's so hard to talk about falling without saying that phrase. I would say what phrase? We'll never know.
I mean, yeah. Last time you said yard sale, I got. Oh
yeah.
I got a little tense.
Yeah. Wow.
I was like, oh, good vocab.
Wow. Got you with the. I think with the hard count there.
The silent count.
Yeah, the silent count.
On three. Yeah.
All right, we'll start talking about these conference championship games.
Oh, football, yeah.
Yeah, that's what this podcast is about. First, we'll start with the Broncos and the Patriots played in Denver. What is it? Energy? It's Mile High Stadium.
It's not important.
It's Mile High Stadium. Empower Field.
Empower.
At Mile High.
Empower?
Nice. Empower.
10-7 was the final score. New England Patriots get
barn
it
burner.
Done. Yeah, barn burner. It was inside a snow globe. I have some questions to raise about
raise
this em. Game for sure.
Raise them.
Well, okay.
Raise them high.
If you watch this game, you know that in the first half, the Broncos were up, I believe, 7-0.
They were up 7-0, had a chance to be up 14-0, turnover in the red zone.
Well, but also had a chance to be up 10-0.
Yeah.
Or...
Well,
yeah.
the game in
no,
general,
it was 7-7
no one can make
time.
A field goal.
It was 7-7 at the time, but this was before the weather got bad. And Sean Payton opts to go for it on fourth down, and they don't get it. But my question is, after we saw the weather in the second half, like, that's something teams surely know about, right? Like, that unless that weather really came out of nowhere,
yeah,
like, nowhere, they have guys that are, like, have the weather reports and are, like,
right.
tracking that. And I already think it's bad. Learning from the other playoff games this season, not to take 3 points in that situation, especially at home. But if he knew that weather was coming, too, it's even more of like coaching malpractice,
like,
in my
points
opinion.
Points are points, yeah. And so with the weather, I mean, as soon as the snow hits, like any 3 points you get feel like a premium, which is not typically how you would feel about a field goal in the big 2-6. But I would say also on the flip side, if you wanted to have like a different rationale, if you're a Broncos coach, is this is our last chance to score a touchdown. We got to pile on now because we're not going to get another touchdown. We're only going to have field goal opportunities from here on out. So maybe that was their thinking. It was 4th-and-1. It was, I guess, a decent drawn up play, a little bubble screen, but it was a great Craig Woodson just blew it up, got to the outside shoulder of Adams and just drove downhill on it. And that's something the Patriots corners, really, all of them, and even Woodson as a safety, maybe they're picking on him since he is a safety, since he's a rookie. But, you know, Christian Gonzalez, Marcus Jones, the screen game has not been effective against the Patriots all year. So, to me, it was a little bit of a questionable play call, especially when you have someone like R.G. Harvey, who's maybe not a power back by any stretch, but had been to that point in the game, like, guaranteed 5 to 10 yards every single carry.
Patriots were doing well in run defense. I do agree with you. I think... I mean, you saw it at the beginning of the game. Safety. Listen, people and Seahawks fans especially are talking a lot about like the Christian Gonzalez kind of getting quote unquote burnt, I guess, in the first drive. However, I will say, to me, that very much looked like a corner who thought he had or should have had safety help over the top in that situation. And I would say, yeah, I would have gone at the safeties there if I was Sean Payton. I do think it's questionable play call. But Nathan, what was your takeaway from this game?
I had a few takeaways. My first takeaway was, one, it was pretty boring. It was pretty boring.
I hate these.
My roommates
takes,
and
though.
I compared it to like the AFC versus NFC championship was like, you know when the JV game happens before the varsity game?
Yeah. No,
that's really
no.
what it felt. That's
no,
really
no.
Well, here's the thing, and I know like, you know, whatever, but like NFC is just so much better. The competition in the NFC is so much better, and I'm sorry. But here's my other take too. I want to talk about snow games. Because there's a lot of discussion on Twitter after the game about, you know, in 20 years, when every stadium has a dome, like, oh, we're going to look back and, like, we're going to reminisce on the snow. And I'm like, but are we, though? Because my thing
yes.
is, like, the quality no. of the game, yes. the quality of the game in the second half,
it's
I'm like,
football. That's
everyone's
so
slipping
football.
Around, and I'm like, okay, well, this is just boring. Like, that one play where Drake May, like, bobbled the snap and couldn't get the handoff
awesome.
To...
That's football, man.
I agree. I think this was a big game for the... For Goodell, honestly, who's very pro getting everyone in indoor stadiums. And I agree. I think it's really nice to have snow games when it's week 8. I don't think it's as nice to have these type of conditions when
and to
it's
your point,
a trip
too,
to the...
Did they really, like, it, they're but... on the sideline, like, wearing, like, hoodies and stuff? Like,
yeah,
did they really know
yeah,
that snow's
yeah.
coming? Like, how lame is that?
Because, like, also, you look at it, like, you look at the snow games in AFC Championships past where you have, like, Chiefs-Bills or something like that, and they're a little bit better prepped for the snow, so... I don't know. Or maybe we can have snow games. It's just maybe certain teams know how to play in the snow. And maybe certain teams at the time were just better. Quarterbacks were better. And you look at it, like Patrick Mahomes threw for 3 touchdowns last time he was in a snow game in the AFC Championship. So, like, I don't know.
I mean, it's kind of like a teach their own, like, what's good for the goose type thing. But.
Yeah.
What's nice idiom
the
there, right?
That's good
right?
for the goose. Well,
Big J journalism.
Yeah, I just think, like, for me, the tale of the tape is that, like, I mean, Jared Stidham, steady, it's
yeah,
hard. Like,
I mean, my God.
He
wasn't his fifth career start, like, ever?
Yeah, he hadn't thrown a football in an NFL game since, like, 2023.
But, too, like, I was actually, before the game, I was like, you know, he's known as, like, a confident guy. Like, he got in the league and he was like, you know, I want a starting job. He gets that starting job. And I thought, you know, the odds are stacked against him. Get dealt a pretty hard hand, you know, playing in that chip game. But I thought he played pretty okay in that first half. Like, I was like, okay, he's making some throws. Like, hold on here.
Just flipped.
But then something happened in that second half where, I mean, you know, the Patriots have a great defense.
I don't know if it was the turnover, if that was the inciting
point.
I
think it was. It was the tide shift.
Well, he threw like a meatball sub with extra parmesan with the game on the line.
He
like,
did do that.
It wasn't
Why was
even
he, like
a,
pushing the ball. Alive.
Yeah,
it was, like,
dude,
shoveling it, him. I'm like, what are you doing?
It wasn't like people.
He did have like 3 of those plays.
He like
went
like this.
Two hand like, shove.
Why do backup quarterbacks always do that? Like they always
you get
try
nervous,
the.
I don't know.
They always try the. Always,
well, I guess the thought was like, you know, it might slip because it was snowing at that time. So like, I don't know, but like. He's
yeah,
enough.
The first
he's
one
far away
backwards.
Enough to where you can so, throw a bullet pass. He's gonna get it.
Oh yeah, wait. That's the Patriots' touchdown was off a
yes.
We'll talk about this when we talk about the Super Bowl. We'll talk about this when we talk about the Super Bowl. But Patriots get it done, and I mean, you have to say they get it done. We'll say the Patriots. Talking about positives about that team, Joe. You could probably go into this a little more. I mean, defense. Granted, we tailor the offenses they played. However, still,
right.
defenses. The defense of the Patriots has played very, very well in the postseason, in my opinion.
It has. I mean, we've allowed 2 touchdowns in 3 games. The turnovers have been off the charts. What, how many takeaways we have in this game? 2 or 3?
2.
I think we might have 10 takeaways in 3 games now. The D-line has been incredible. And I think the biggest thing about this Patriots defense, we'll see on the health of Robert Spillane, but... at all 3 levels, D-line, linebacking crew, D-backs, and even split them up, cornerbacks, safeties, every single position group is well above average, which means that we can afford to play a lot of man coverage, which is what we did against the Broncos that kind of carved out an advantage. I don't know if we'll be able to do that as much against the Seahawks with JSN and Cooper Kupp are great at beating man.
So tough.
But the personnel in the backfield or in the DB crew was really good and pretty deep as well. And then the D-line out of nowhere. I mean, they've been solid all year, but health had been kind of a revolving door. To get Milton Williams back, I mean, the D-line has really wreaked havoc, and that's where even against probably the best O-line in the league in Denver, we absolutely took over the game in the trenches. And so, you know, there's a bunch of keys that, you know, things that would need to happen for the Patriots to do it again against the Seahawks. I think the D-line's an underrated thing where no matter how good your O-line is, what this D-line has done to some really good O-lines in the playoffs has been super eye-opening. And to me, it's been like the biggest, as someone who's watched the team all year, it's been the biggest surprise. Not to say that I didn't expect the D-line to be solid, but it's totally taken over games.
As a Seahawks fan, that's the one thing that scares me is your interior D-line, particularly against number 75, Anthony Bradford. That's like my fear. Anything else about this game?
I think the Patriots are a great team, like you said. You know, they have their position players and their roster is really well built, and I think they're very dynamic. But what I do think the Patriots, why I think, and it hurts to say this out loud as a 49ers fan, but I think the Seahawks, I mean, you know, every single sports book has them favored, but I think it's for a reason, because I think the Patriots offense needs to be more than like serviceable. I think it's been surviving.
It hasn't been more than serviceable.
It's like in the playoffs. They can't go in the Super Bowl hoping Drake May is just going to manage the game.
That's absolutely the number one question mark.
Yeah,
they need to be explosive, and that's what the Seahawks are. They're explosive. They got, like you said, JSN and Cooper Kupp. Like, they're more dynamic than the Patriots are, and I think.
Absolutely.
And the one thing too is, the Seahawks maybe not arguably, they have a better defense.
Yeah.
So
the Seahawks are the best defense in the league. But
like the weeds.
I will say Vrabel also though is known as kind of like, this is his thing of like, he's touted as kind of like the situational preparedness guy. Like he's prepared. He's touted as the guy who's like, oh, he's the guy you'd want in the Super Bowl, because when it comes to
I can't think of a time
prepping,
this season where he's made a decision and you're like, oh, he shouldn't have done that. Like, he really, down the stretch, manages games well. But, yeah, I think the offense is the biggest thing. Is the offense has been, frankly, not good in the postseason, but it's been enough. A couple of questions. One, how well is Drake May going to be able to throw with the right shoulder injury? Expect him to be fine, but we'll see. And then how well is he able to run the ball? Because that was the X factor against the Broncos.
Their entire
offense was Drake May running the ball.
I will say it doesn't help that the Seahawks
have
the best run defense in the league by a mile, haven't allowed a rusher over 100 yards in 32 games.
It's not really our thing, though.
It's not.
and then also, like, how much success can we have over the top? Because that's something that we haven't unlocked in the postseason except for that one booty catch, the one-handed grab in the divisional round.
I will say too,
the deep ball has been a huge factor in our offense, and it's pretty much disappeared in the postseason. I think to beat a defense as good as the Seahawks, you need to early on establish all or both of those things.
Yeah.
How do you get May going on the ground and get the deep ball going to open up the defense and create a dynamic offense instead of what has become, you know, run on first and second down, try and find something on third down, not willing to go over the top. May will create with his legs, and that's really the only time you're getting first down conversions on third downs. I mean, there's a lot more ifs for the Patriots than Seattle, and I think that's why Seattle's favorite.
Patriots, their story of that game and story of their postseason, I guess, is they had a regular season that was – the tail was really their dominant offense, but their defense has stepped up in the playoffs. And now I think you look at the Seahawks, and it's almost the opposite case, where the story of their season is how good their defense is, but moving – to the Rams Seahawks game in Seattle, Seahawks win 31-27. It was definitely the offense that won the Seahawks this game. And granted, I think McVay in the Rams offense has caused the Seahawks defense trouble throughout the entire season.
Yep.
But Stafford, in my opinion, dropped the best quarterback performance for a Seahawks quarterback in Seahawks playoff history. Darnold.
Yeah,
Stafford played great too. His third.
Well, yeah, Stafford played great.
Game is awesome.
The Rams in their two games in Seattle, I believe, have put up like 1,000 all-purpose yards. Have had zero interceptions. And have
this
lost
rivalries. Awesome.
Have lost both the games.
Yeah.
What have you seen the meme where it's like, this is what the Rams versus Seahawks games have felt like all season? It's just like. They just got like some like rock music over it. They got like it's just like a compilation of like lightsaber battle. There's dinosaurs, NASCAR. Like
I texted my buddy in the second quarter. It's like most obvious 63-60 OT game of all time.
Yeah, I mean, these guys know how to play ball. I think Kubiak also coached the game of his
great
the game. Of
he's
his
gonna
life.
Be like yeah. He's gonna be a great hire. Yeah.
I was saying about the Rams, their struggle all season has been two things. They have a very mediocre secondary. And their special teams unit
sold
is bad. And that's what happened. I mean, JSN was feasting all night. JSN, his stocks just keep rising. He's such a, like, had one of the purest one-handed catches I've seen in a while.
Purest.
Check his gloves. Darnold just looked poised in the pocket. He looked composed. Darnold has the most touchdown throws under pressure in NFL playoff history. It's not that many. It's
also,
four.
Did you guys know this? Since 2022. Okay. Since 2022. Okay, I just have to say this too. You know, Sam Darnold, USC. Like, I was never a believer. I'm in a UCLA family, so I was born to just kind of like not associate with that. So I'm gonna go out and say publicly, I was never a believer in him. I thought he threw hella picks, and I never really was into that. But since 2022, he's 32-9, 65% completion percentage, and he's a 99 passer rating.
He has better.
He's won the most games since 2022, more than Patrick Mahomes.
Those stats, by the way, over since 2022, is better than the reigning MVP Josh Allen. Better than a lot of quarterbacks. Also, he's the first USC quarterback to ever make a Super Bowl, which I thought
that's interesting.
Is kind of crazy considering
next
just,
up Iceman.
Yeah, next maybe who knows?
Chill.
No, it'll be the Seahawks and the Rams.
That's a joke.
I think it'll be the Seahawks and the Rams for. Comfortable amount of time in the NFC.
I think that's reasonable.
On the Niners.
But also, like you said,
Darnold looked great in the pocket, and he, you know, I think he had one of his best games of his career, but also kind of like comparing it or juxtaposing it, Big J Journalism, to Drake May in the Patriots. Like, Drake May has gone beat up. Like, yeah. you talked about the lines and kind of the game of the trenches, but here we go.
Oh.
Drake May, Patriots quarterback, became just the third quarterback since the 1970 merger to get sacked at least five times in three straight games and win them all. So, like, you know, he's had to deal with a lot. But Darnold, he's had, like you said, he's been pressured a lot, but kind of more of a cleaner pocket. And I think that's going to be kind of a decision maker in that game, too.
I was always saying, because I remember, so when we played the Rams the first time on, like, week eight, the tail of the tape was – people were talking about, like, granted, we lost that game, but, like, people were like, oh, Darnold, big game choker, whatever.
Yeah.
And I always
I'm going to be right in that narrative.
I honestly think, even though he really should have silenced it with this game, I don't think unless he wins the Super Bowl, that narrative
because
will be.
My whole thing, and this is, like, it might be stupid, but what I'm going to lean on in my debate of this game the next week and a half is Sam Darnold, big game choker, even if he hasn't always been a big game
choker. He's the only quarterback without a turnover
in
the playoffs.
But also started on the Jets, where he was so bad against the Patriots.
Yeah.
He's seeing ghosts.
Yeah, literally.
Well, like, how do you beat the Patriots?
Yeah, well, here's my thing.
Maybe there's a mental block with the New England Patriots.
Here's my thing.
And he's still seeing
ghosts.
He's been
on five teams, though.
I think he throws three interceptions in this game. I think he throws three picks.
Here's my thing. Darnold, in the game that he lost on the Vikings in the playoffs against the Rams, he got sacked 10 times in that game. I think a lot of people forget that. Nowhere near those sort of sack totals when he's been on the Seahawks. I just think, first of all, the fact that he was able to do this against the team that really started his playoff choker legacy in the Rams and then has the potential to get revenge in a Super Bowl against the team. Not only did the Seahawks get revenge over a Super Bowl loss, Sam Darnold is playing, Joe, you said it. Sam Darnold is literally playing the team that the Seeing Ghosts meme started off
of. He was synonymous with Seeing Ghosts for like 3 years until he established himself again on the Vikings.
Yeah, I just think
that was his only reputation.
Hats off to him, though. Like, the amount of hate that he got, and now, like, he's in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, he's ready to go through it again.
Yeah, I just also want to say, for me, I'd be remiss if I didn't highlight two players. First of all, I'm going to go out and say it. Seahawks fan. I love him, and I think he's a very underrated corner. Devin Witherspoon was getting cooked for the majority of this game. However, when it mattered, final Rams or second to last Rams drive, two huge pass breakups on third and four and fourth and four, really stepped up. But for me, player I got to give all the credit to, and I loved him all year, Nicky Manwari, in my opinion, is the best player on this defense somehow.
Yeah, that's not crazy.
As a rookie, he is like the ultimate Swiss Army knife player. The biggest drive, in my opinion, was stopping them late in the first half, letting the CS get the ball back. He had two pass breakups in a row, and he's just been everywhere, stopping the run, getting to the quarterback, coverage downfield against great, great wide receivers, and that type of energy. He was also in Tariq Woolen's face after the mistake, which is crazy because Tariq Woolen's a fourth-year player.
The taunting.
Let's talk about that really quick. First of all, I would also like to remind Rams fans that game wouldn't be close if it wasn't for that taunting penalty. However, the taunting penalty, rules are rule. Not going to complain about that. They called it. That's how it was. However, I think if you don't push someone and you're really just jawing at the sideline, sure, call a penalty. But I do kind of think it is ridiculous that a taunting penalty on a 4th and 12 can be 15 yards and automatic first down. That, especially if you're just jawing at the side. Like, granted, it was egregious, but like,
I don't know.
So that really, like, that's maybe something like, fine, give it to us. When they punt the ball, give us 15 yards back from wherever the Seahawks.
I don't know. Just don't taunt.
Yeah, also, especially a player in a contract year. Seahawks have 5 personal fouls this year on the season. Tariq Woolen has 4 of them. Also, Mike McDonald benched him after that.
Yeah.
Shout out. Mm-hmm. Contract year, don't really want to do that. Like, that's one of those things where, like, if the Seahawks lose that game, it is because of that. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, a little bit of a Kevin King legacy.
I also think, though, maybe I was Kevin saying this King. Too. A little bit of the blame, in my opinion.
Pretty sure he went to my high school, by
yeah. A little bit of the blame, in my opinion, on that, too, goes to teammates as well, because I think if you're guy like Ernest Jones or Witherspoon was around him when he started talking.
Yeah.
That's one of those things where you got to recognize the moment and be like, yo, can you stop? Like, you got to get back. I also think, though, there is precedent for NFL refs giving a little bit more of a warning. The ref did say, also, there was a guy on the side, that side reporter did say that Woolen didn't say anything crazy. It was the length of what he did. I think also that he stepped onto the sideline is what really forced the ref's hand. But man, I was
also, I think the atmosphere, the environment, like, I feel like it, like you said, like maybe if that was like a week 7 game, I don't know.
Yeah, don't call that in an NFC championship.
Yeah, everything changes.
Yeah,
in the playoffs, you know, it's like kind of the NBA. They don't call the same fouls that they do in the regular season, of course.
Yeah. Also, I will say, on that play was a great example of it. But Stafford has gotten away with a lot of bad balls that should have been picked, but Puka Nacua becomes like an all-pro level cornerback and punches the ball out. It's crazy. It's happened like 3 games in a row where Stafford has thrown a would-be interception that Puka Nacua plays defense on. So we'll see. Feel bad for Stafford. Devontae Adams loses his 5th career.
Yeah. Wow.
Conference championship game. 2 of those being in Seattle.
Wait, has he made a Super Bowl?
Nope. He's 0-5 in his career in conference championship games. I think if you're McVay, there's some conversations that are had around the coaching staff. They already fired their special teams coordinator midway through the season.
Also, McVay, when they scored that touchdown, why not go for 2? I don't get it.
Yeah, or why not? Yeah.
Because then on the next drive, they were kind of aggressive, right? Yeah. But going on the 4th down. But it's like if you're aggressive, then
you go for 2, you get to 3-point game.
Yeah.
So I don't get it.
Oh, also, on that 4th down.
Yeah, it makes no difference.
Yeah. Yeah,
because even if you don't get it, it's a 5-point game. Then after a field goal, it's still a 1-possession game.
And he showed that he wanted to be aggressive after that.
Yeah,
which
it
was
doesn't
like
make any sense.
After,
literally
but
makes
it's
sense.
Like, what?
Yeah. Also, I will say that 4th down at the end of the game that they didn't get, Devin Witherspoon broke it up. Now that we've had some time from the game, some NFL Films clips have come out. DeMarcus Lawrence, shout out him, I guess. What happened there is that route was purely designed for Kyron Williams' wheel route into the end zone, and he actually had beaten the safety. However, there was a miscommunication on the defense. DeMarcus Lawrence is supposed to blitz, but he didn't.
Is this the play where
he didn't. So now you have 2 players trailing Kyron Williams, and DeMarcus Lawrence is a lot bigger than Kobe Bryant. So you have now he can't get that ball over the top. And that was Matthew Stafford's first read. And now there's only like three guys rushing. You see Matthew Stafford go and he looks and he's like, that's not there. And so he kind of has to wait and wait and then throw it. And you heard Stafford even after the fact say like, who looking at the film at the like being like, who was I supposed to throw it? Like, who was I supposed to throw it to there? Like, did I have that? And it was Sean McVay said it was a fortuitous busted coverage. And I guess that wouldn't be untrue. But McVay also was running down the sideline like he was about to call a timeout again. Like he wasn't sure about his play call. So we'll see. I just feel bad. It seems like for some reason the Seahawks-Rams games are just cinema. And the Seahawks offense comes to play. And I will say, Seahawks defense in these Rams games, even if they have been torched a lot, has come through, I guess, when you really needed them. Like, it was the fourth quarter, the second time out we played them, three straight three and outs, and then this fourth down, got the stop. It's what you needed to do.
Huge.
Yeah. Can't believe it's Seahawks-Patriots.
Rematch from, like, 6 years ago, right?
Second.
Just that we drew it up.
Boys. Second least likely playoff or championship matchup in American sports history.
I mean, none of these teams, both teams didn't make the playoffs last year, right?
Yeah, I think both of our win lines was 8.5.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy it's just that low in retrospect.
I told everyone, and I didn't follow my own advice. I told everyone, like, hammer our win. Like, because we were a 10-win team last year with Geno Smith.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, Patriots are going 10-7. And then they went 14-3. So I was also wrong, but like at least I was like on the right side.
I think I was
like,
the
gonna be way
I was the well. Second. Also, I saw our schedule. Granted, now that schedule turned into a lot of playoff teams because a lot of teams overperformed. But
we were the other one.
Yeah, I was banging the drum. NFL Friday Week One. Like, ask anyone. Like, I was saying we were a minimum a 12-win team. Like the Seahawks were gonna win 12 games. Yeah. And
I remember we looked at power rankings, and I think it was like Seattle 21, New England 22. Wow,
yeah,
which is so funny.
They had the Cardinals had higher odds to win the Super Bowl before the season than the Seahawks.
Literally, what are you talking about?
This year was like all over the place to the NFL. Yeah, everyone was all over the place.
I think the Seahawks really do just kind of get forgotten about because of just like Northwest, like furthest corner of the country, like about as far away from these East Coast elite media outlets as you can get. But no, I mean, wow. Like, you really. And the fact that Joe and I are going to the Super Bowl, Seahawks
That's
fan,
huge.
Patriots fan.
That's so lit.
It's real hoops.
It is.
It's because of us, too.
I don't know, though, Joe. I will say, granted, at the beginning of the year, we were kind of saying it as a joke. But for me, I'm curious, you feel this way about Patriots. Yeah. Midway through the season, I believe it was at, like, after we beat the Texans on Monday Night Football. Mm-hmm. I kind of just from then on out, like, had that feeling somewhere in my mind. Like, I feel like Seahawks really about to do this.
I don't remember. I mean, I think when we beat the Bills week 5, it was like, all right, okay, we're actually good. And then for me, I just kind of let it ride. I wasn't trying to overthink our potential. I was just like, I want to just appreciate this season. But then I couldn't tell you exactly the moment, but as the season went on, I was like, I think we're like going to Super Bowl.
I started feeling for the big games.
It's
like,
just a Team of Destiny type vibe.
Yeah, that's
like, if we ran into the Bills, I would have been really scared and thought that the Bills were going to beat us because Josh Allen's Josh Allen, even if we're the better team. But otherwise, it was just like, this team has everything going for it.
The vibe I got, and honestly, it's the vibe I feel at the Super Bowl, but for all these big Seahawks games recently, is kind of, you know when you like study for a test and you study a lot, and then but you still feel like, oh. Like
but
I feel like those are always the tests that like you do well on is the ones where you
feel
like
you're like I think I got a B on that and you get back 98 where, you're like
it got to the point where I feel like I was almost forcing myself to be nervous.
I almost felt that last week just because of Stidham.
Yeah, like you're forcing yourself to be nervous, but like deep down you're like, I don't know.
I think Sunday was the most nervous I'd ever been watching a Patriots game. I think I've probably been more nervous watching like a couple of the Celtics Heat games from those conference finals and maybe like the LeBron Tatum game 7, but watching the Patriots, at least in recent memory, I mean, I guess obviously since the Brady era ended, but I can't remember the last time I was that nervous. I mean, it had to have been like Super Bowl 51. I was literally like, my roommates were watching me, I was just like freaking out.
There were two moments when I thought the Seahawks, it was over, and that was when the Rams scored and then stopped the Seahawks early in the end of the first half when they had the advantage, and then Trequel and penalty. I was like shaking the whole game too. I don't think I spoke from after the
I couldn't stop speaking, which is unlike me if you know me. Like, I'm not a loud guy. I usually like to watch the game alone and quiet. Yeah. But I think but when the snow happened, I was simultaneously like, this is awesome. I love snow in football. This is so cool. And also, like, freaking out knowing that we weren't going to score and that we just had to find a way because fourth quarter was the wind was at us. So it was like, all right, we have no hope. Our punter has been really bad, frankly, in the playoffs, Bryce Barringer. Our kicker's a rookie and kicking into the wind. It's just not going to happen. We're not going to score. Yeah. I'm like, I'm freaking out, but simultaneously, I'm like, snow, snow.
Yeah.
That's just Joe.
All right. Let's talk about let's really quickly, we kind of touched on it a little bit. Let's preview the Super Bowl. I'll go first. I think the one thing is Drake May over rushing yards is hitting. The Seahawks play a lot of deep court.
Most important thing about the Super Bowl. Let's preview
this. This is like sponsored by DraftKings.
Well, the Seahawks, right? the Seahawks play really heavy, like basically only play quarters defense, which does leave a gap in between. Like that, it does leave that space if Drake May gets free. I think for me, the X factor is Drake May fumbles the ball a lot under pressure.
But I will say he made it a point not to in the AFC Championship game. But there's a downside with that where his decision making in the pocket under pressure was significantly impaired, where he had probably been the best guy in the league in those situations at staying calm, cool, and collected off of the blitz.
Yeah.
In the Broncos game, did not feel like that at all. Some of his decisions were rust, and there was like a dropped interception. Otherwise, deciding not to throw it and just tucking it, taking a sack. It was not the kind of Drake May you had to somehow find a balance where he has the level of aggression and comfortability in that situation, but also limit the turnovers.
Yeah, I think the stories will be the offenses. I think because I do think the Patriots defense is better than the Rams defense, and I think the story will be if the Patriots O line plays like it did against the Broncos, the Patriots will lose Super Bowl in my opinion, and that's because the Seahawks have punished teams that a lot. If teams allow the Seahawks to get to the quarterback, you'll be punished. The only other thing I think is positive for the Patriots is Seahawks are unstoppable if you let them run the ball. However, Patriots' run defense has been pretty solid. So there's that. I think it'll come down to quarterback. I think it'll come down to quarterback mistakes.
I mean, it's always a quarterback game, man. I would say with the Patriots' run defense, like, we don't give up explosive runs. Our defensive backs are really good tacklers in the open field. So, you know, you don't have to worry about, with the exception of maybe a deep ball, which really hasn't been much of a problem besides that Broncos game, that one play.
Which Shaheed and JSN are not the guys you want to go up against.
Exactly. That scares me. But in terms of the run defense, I don't really worry about it, even though I think K-9's really good. It's always a quarterback's game, and you never know because Drake may have been an MVP candidate all year and has not been great in the playoffs, and he's going to need to be great to win this game. And then Sam Darnold has been so great, but you never know with Sam Darnold. You never know.
Yeah, I think the Seahawks got – I hammered Seahawks -4.5. I think if the Seahawks aren't winning by more than 4.5 points, I don't think they're winning the game personally. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think the Seahawks win a close game against the Patriots. However – I do very much see a future where Seahawks defer to start, 3-and-out, Seahawks score, and then Drake May.
Ball snapped over the head.
Second drive, Drake May gets sacked or fumbles.
I mean, I don't know. I think it's also going to come down to turnovers, but more so like red zone too, because I think Seattle moves the ball really well between the 20s, but they've stalled in the red zone at times.
Yeah, definitely.
And
Patriots
do have one of the worst red zone defenses, but it was the worst.
But also the Seahawks are like much better. Every time I watch them, they've got some sort of issue in the red zone, whether it be penalties or just like kind of conservative calls. It gets down to that third down, and it's just like you huck up something or throw it away. So, and also like you said, against a defense that tightens near the goal line. I don't know. Settling for field goals against a team like the Patriots, where the Patriots want a low-scoring game. Like, they want this game. They don't want the game to be out of hand. They don't want to chase points. No. Patriots need to be in that zone. But also, like, New England thrives on mistakes, too. Like, one mistake from Seattle, Patriots will capitalize. And that's the issue that Seattle should.
I was going to say, granted, like, I don't think the Patriots have had a lot of, like, if the Seahawks can avoid turnovers, then it's a different story because there's not a lot of Patriots. This offense has been in a lot of fortuitous positions where they have smaller fields. I will say one X factor that I would look out for in this game, I think Jake Bobo has the potential to have a big impact in this game. Only because Marcus Jones is 5'8", right?
Yeah. He might be 5'10". Marcus Jones is that boy.
Yeah, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see Jake Bobo line up a lot, get a lot of reps, purely because you can either, A, honestly, just for run blocking.
Sure.
Jake Bobo on Marcus Jones is a mismatch,
yeah,
size-wise.
Sure.
Or also, you could just throw it up, you know? And I'm sure he's that guy, but Jake Bobo can run some routes. Only 4 catches this season. We saw that touchdown in the game this week. Yeah. And, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a lot of looks in, and then it's just going to be really – it's kind of a hard thing for the Patriots defense with JSN because you can't really leave him in man because he's just so good against man.
You have to shadow him.
But then also it's one of those things where, like, it's never a good thing to switch up what you do all year in the Super Bowl. And, like, you can't overthink JSN. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a hard pitfall to deal with, whereas I don't think the Seahawks necessarily, with Kayshon Booty, Matt Collins, and Stephon Diggs, have to think about that. And it'll be – there's more of a – but, yeah, I think there's more of a capability for the Patriots to overthink this than there is for the Seahawks to overthink this.
I agree. It's going to be interesting because the Patriots have been so, so good against wide receiver ones all year. Like, they have not done anything at all. I can't think of a game where a wide receiver one torched the Patriots, but JSN's a different beast.
Yeah, that was every team before they played JSN. Like, the Falcons, the Texans, JSN torched both those.
So that's what's scary, but no, I trust Gonzalez man-to-man a ton. Carlton Davis, assuming he's good, gets a lot of penalties, but also is pretty sticky. I assume that he would get the Shaheed matchup.
Shaheed doesn't get reps.
Doesn't get that many.
He doesn't. Kubiak doesn't use him that much on offense at all.
I thought he started two more.
No, Shaheed's only reception was that 55-yarder
at
the start of the game.
Okay.
Yeah, Kubiak doesn't really use him. It's more Cup, and however, that's in. Also, look out for who I think is still underrated. A.J. Barner is a very good tight end, not only in run blocking, but red zone and getting open. That'll be what it is. I really think it'll be the Seahawks offense will be Kenneth Walker, JSN, Cooper Kupp, and maybe Jake Bobo. I think Seahawks are going to try to run the ball, and that's what it'll come down to the trends.
They've learned.
They're
going to run the ball, Griffin.
I actually think if you get in that position, sure. It would be more poetic if they scored
on
a passing play.
Imagine if it's 28-24 with a minute left and New England has 2 timeouts and decides not to take one, and the Seahawks are at the 2-yard line. If they score, they win the Super Bowl, and you could give it to K-9, who has like 200 yards in the game, and they try to pass, and they try to throw a ball to Jake Bobo, and it's intercepted by Craig Woodson.
You almost do pass in that scenario because it's like no way they pass. It's more poetic and more vindicating if we score on a pass.
Should they have Russell Wilson do
the poeticism and the vindication?
Okay, no, Russell Wilson do the coin toss?
Yeah, ideal scenario, though, is that the Seahawks are up by enough where it's like game's kind of already over, and then you get the ball at the 1-yard line, and then you do pass it just because you can, you know what I mean? And then see what happens. No, Kubiak would probably drop some dumb like Jalen Milroe triple option or something like that. But that's not a position I want to be in. Let's hope. I think the Seahawks, Sam Darnold's better with the field in front of him and has shown that he can make good throws. So, but before we end out this episode, Nathan Rodgers, if you guys aren't aware, Bill Belichick, what was it, 10 votes shy? 40? You got 40 of the 50 votes necessary?
I think you had to
get
at least 40.
You got 39, right?
I don't know what he got. Did they come out that it was 39? I just know he didn't get 40.
I think you had, yeah.
Not a first ballot Hall of Famer, which, well, we'll let Nathan Rodgers speak about it. I think that's ridiculous. I think that question brings into question. I think that brings into question then what is a first ballot Hall of Fame coach? You know what I mean?
Okay, well, let me just – here's my take. It's an interesting one. Not a lot of people will like this, but I will start with saying, yes, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Okay.
He'll get in. Let's just get this straight. Everyone's a little overreacting. He's going to get in.
Well, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So that's not the discussion. The discussion is, why didn't he get in this year? And let me break this down. First of all, the new rule this year, coaches can get in after 1 year. What's up with that? Because players have to wait 5 years.
That's irrelevant, though.
No, it's not. Because Don Shula, the winningest coach in NFL history, right?
Yeah.
Dan Marino, whatever, right? He had to wait 5 years.
Doesn't matter.
Andy Reid's going to have to wait. Yeah. You know, Bill Walsh had to wait, which every offense right now is like a Bill Walsh offense, West Coast, whatever, right? And also, all those, not all of them, but a majority of them, or some of them, right? They're writers, okay? So they're writers. And so I'm going to make the argument, no one's going to like this, but he did cheat. Okay, so there was a scandal, or suspected, right?
Yeah, but
and writers hold grudges. They're writers. They're not players. They're not football people. They're just writers. They're journalists, whatever. So they have opinions. That's how they work. And so that's going to happen. And you look at, like, what Tom Brady said, too. This is the world of voting.
Yeah.
And also part of my take, too, is if you look at Bill Belichick, too, and this is tough for me to say, too, because I sort of don't really agree with it, but I'm just going to say it. It's hard to look at him, the way Belichick worked without Brady was very suspect.
Yeah, I mean, he did not have any success without Brady.
At all. And if you look at Mike Vrabel, he went to the playoffs with Ryan Tannehill as a one seed.
Yeah, I do also think, though.
And now he's in the Super Bowl with Drake May.
If we're talking about cheating,
also Vince Lombardi didn't get in after one year.
My best friend
can wait.
Belichick's the best.
Yeah, my best friend is a Colts fan, and even he knows to admit that under deflated balls, the Patriots still blew out. Still, no, but he's a Colts fan, and he even recognizes.
Even like, I don't consider that cheating because it's
no.
I
but what about 2007? He blew up cheating. Super Bowl week.
Oh, all right. Oh, it happens.
I think what happened. Look at him. He didn't win anything without Brady. Everyone else had to wait.
He played with Brady 95% of his career.
I think the Malcolm Butler thing is coaching malpractice. But the one thing I will say, I really do think this is that Robert Kraft has immense pull in the NFL community and has run a crazy Bill Belichick hate train.
That's crazy. I mean, I don't see why you'd want to do that, like, from a business perspective.
No, because he's already said Bill Belichick's not getting anything and Patriots.
Well, here's my thing, too. You don't think people in that room were like, wait, guys, Jim, Don Shula had to wait? Vince waited?
But that has nothing to do with it. Like, if they changed the rule, they changed the rule. You can't make everyone wait 5 years.
Just wait till they make,
I think there's some principle to it, though.
No, there's not.
But why should a coach get in earlier than a player?
I don't know. It's a stupid rule, but that is the rule, and you shouldn't have to wait.
But there's probably people in that room that disagree with that rule and did it out of spite from the rule. That's what my take is. Would I have voted him? Yes, I would have voted him, obviously. But I'm saying why it happened, I mean, writing's on the wall.
That's ridiculous to me.
Yeah, well,
I mean, like, I don't know, though. Can you at least see that, like, that would make sense to some people?
No. He's the greatest coach of all time.
But some people hold grudges. They're writers, bro.
He's the greatest coach of all time.
He's a jerk. People don't like him. Like, writers don't like people. That's what writers do. Look at movies. Like, look at Hollywood. Writers, critics will always hold Scorsese. Yeah. All those
guys.
Hold him to a grudge.
There's an Athletic article.
It's just how it works. Voting world.
There's an Athletic article with one of the voters who didn't vote for Belichick. And Nathan, you might be right, actually. What he says is basically that when he was going to look at this, he's thinking of all the players that still haven't made it. He said he thought of a backlog. He's a Kansas City writer. He said thought of a backlog of at least three Kansas City Chiefs players who haven't made it. And he said in these situations,
yeah, I'm sure they're more deserving.
He said in this situation, he is more inclined to vote for the veterans who have been waiting on the Hall of Fame for a longer amount of time than he is to vote for Bill Belichick. Granted, he's a Kansas City writer, but
well, because also the thing is, yes, it's ridiculous, but he's going to get in. So why does it matter?
Yeah,
it's because it does. First ballot means something.
Yeah.
Means something, and it hurts your credibility and how you're seen throughout history. If you don't get as a first ballot, even though the unanimous consensus right now is that he's the greatest coach of all time, or virtually unanimous
consensus. I don't really think it matters that much.
Well, when you look at it, like, 50 years later, like, oh, he wasn't first ballot. Like,
I think we're potentially watching two first ballot. To end this app, I think we're potentially watching two future first ballot Hall of Fame coaches coach each other in the Super Bowl. I think Mike Donald has the potential to be
Same
with Vrabel considering these
I
are both
Vrabel's great.
Yeah, but especially because I don't know if you feel this way about Patriot. Like, for me, Mike Donald with Seahawks, these are guys that I think could be with their organizations for the next 20 years.
Vrabel.
Yeah,
Like, he could be, like, the next Tomlin, like,
yeah,
long-term.
There's no, yeah, yeah, there's no reason why McDonald will be gone either. Like, they're just great.
Yeah.
They're just great coaches. But that'll wrap up this episode of NFL Friday. We doing NFL Friday? Will people be on NFL Friday next week? Are we going to do NFL Friday from the Super Bowl? We might as well.
We'll think about it. We'll talk about
it
tomorrow.
Well, there, NFL Friday will be decided, but there will definitely be some sort of NFL Friday. Make sure if you're listening to this, tune in next week on WFV's YouTube channel for live from Radio Row, episodes of One-on-One. Joe Henry and I will be there alongside Owen Kelty, Chris Carino, Tucker Austin, and Brendan Shorey. Super excited for the Super Bowl, the 60th one. I've been Kevin Stevenson, joined by Joe Henry, Nathan Rogers, Mary Hannah Gallagher behind the glass. NFL Friday is a production of WFUV Sports.